Let's go.
You're listening to Making Data Simple, where we make the world of data effortless, relevant, and yes, even fun.
Go. Hey folks, Making Data Simple is back. I do have a little bit of a cold today. I brought that back from Italy. I was on Italy on business. And look, it's not COVID, which is good. I noticed that you don't get COVID if you don't test for it. No, I'm just kidding. I did test for it, and I do not have COVID, I promise you. But I do have a little cold today. Today, I am with Nick Freund. He is the founder and the CEO of Workstream. He's a seasoned SaaS industry executive, leading startups focused on product-led growth. He, as I mentioned, is the founder and CEO of Workstream, which is a seed stage technology startup that helps data teams manage critical data assets. Prior to Workstream, Nick earned his MBA at Harvard and served as a VP of operations for BetterCloud. And before that, Nick held senior finance positions at Tesla. Welcome. I'm so glad that you're here. We're going to have some fun today. Thank you, Nick, for being here.
Thanks, Al, so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I probably butchered that a bit. I would like you to, if you would, and I do this for all my guests, I wanted to give you some time to like talk to your experience, your history, and what brings you to today.
Yeah, of course. And as a brief sequitur, which you might find funny, when I was reading your name in preparation for this talk, for the first 20 minutes, I thought it was AI because it's A, lowercase l, which just goes to show you how predisposed people are to think about tech buzzwords these days. Anyways, you can use that.
It's the burden of my existence now. I'm everywhere. Any email I think I'm in and I say, oh, it's an AI email. It's not an AI email. Anyway.
So good.
I got it.
The question was to tell you about my background. Of course. So as you mentioned, I started my career at Tesla and this was almost 15 years ago, which is kind of crazy to think about how times have changed. And Tesla was a very, very different company back then. People think of it as this iconic electric car company, but we were a 200 person startup at the time when I joined. And this was right at the time where Elon was investing his personal money into the company to keep it afloat. And anyways, I spent the first 4 years of my time there working really closely with the Tesla Roadster and then later Model S teams bringing kind of those vehicles to market, developing them. And I was the kind of finance analytics support first as an individual contributor analyst and then later on as a more senior member of the team. I worked really, really closely kind of as a analytics professional and just got really, really inspired by not only the mission of Tesla, but just the work of kind of these amazing operators who are building products and like building our business. And I was just really inspired by kind of that as a career path more broadly. So I ended up leaving Tesla after a pretty amazing period. We went public, of course. And I spent a couple of years at Harvard Business School, and I'll kind of fast forward through the business school experience. But after business school, I ended up leading operations at an early stage SaaS company here in New York City, where I now live, called BetterCloud. And was even earlier than Tesla, 20 people when I joined. I was one of the first business hires there, and our founder and CEO kind of just threw me at kind of existential problems for the business over and over as we found product market fit and then later scaled. And so I really got that kind of operational experience that I was so inspired by early on in my career as an analyst. And I also worked really closely and helped build a lot of our internal analytics and data functions at BetterCloud. And so it was kind of the collection of all of those experiences, which kind of inspired the Workstream.io journey and kind of what we're building today.
Are you you consider yourself a technologist or are you a business person? Or I mean, what's your brand?
Yeah, I normally characterize myself as a like technology startup generalist with deep expertise in analytics. And so I'm definitely not a technologist. Like I'm not an engineer. I have a co-founder and our CTO who runs our, you know, like our engineering team. And I'm not like one of the members of the team that like sling code. If you think about my role on our team now, I lead like all business development efforts, all strategy, and then I'm very, very deep in our product. And so I am kind of master, or rather dangerous everywhere, master nowhere is the way I describe it.
I'll have to remember that. That's a tweetable comment. Dangerous everywhere, master of nowhere. So you left the golden child of Tesla. I'm surprised you could walk out of there with good conscience, given it's quote unquote the golden child today. What made you leave? And you must have been on a personal relationship with Elon if there's only 200 people.
Yeah, I mean, everyone at that point had run-ins with Elon, which is another way of calling saying you had a personal relationship with him, right? I mean, the guy is brilliant, and you can't argue with what he's building, right, and the vision he has across all of his different ventures. But I mean, he's definitely like a mercurial personality, and the like Steve Jobs aura of him like is there. And so you would be in meetings presenting to him, and you know, you're in like your early 20s at the beginning of my time at Tesla. You're like presenting to someone like Elon. You're like terrified. But yeah, I mean, leaving Tesla, I mean, like first you have to remember when I left Tesla, this was over a decade ago. And so it was very different than it was today. It was a company that was becoming, it was a startup that was becoming a real company that had just gone public, but we were beginning production on the Tesla Roadster, right? And so we felt we had like inspired this electric vehicle revolution, but it wasn't what it had become today. And obviously my career would have ended up in a very different direction if I had stayed there, and I would have become a very senior finance analytics person at Tesla. And so it's very much like the path not traveled. But what I got from it was this like diversity of experiences, right? And just the passion of like building stuff from scratch and building things completely new, which is honestly what I really enjoy doing.
Now, is there a small part that regrets it? Seems like there's a little smidgen of, hey, maybe if I'd have stayed there, you didn't anticipate it being the company it is today. Or you say, no, not at all. Not at all.
If I had stayed there, I probably would have made an insane amount of money. I did very well, but I mean, like, yeah. Look at the stock price, right? So if you're there for a 15-year period of time, I mean, you can do the math of what that cost you. But look, I think it's something I maybe regretted more earlier in my career. But when I look at all of the things that my life and career journey has done for me, it's not something I regret at all, right? And yeah. There's also like personal reasons I moved to New York. I like what I'm truly passionate about now is like building new and innovative like products, right? And I just think at this point I would be bored at Tesla just developing the next vehicle.
Never look back. You know, that's kind of my philosophy as well. You can't look back. You wouldn't be the person you are today. Anyway, if you put yourself back in the days where you were at Tesla, could you have envisioned it being the company it is today?
No, I don't think anyone that was there during that, let's say, vintage, right? Like that employee vintage, yeah. That thought it would be worth more than every other major vehicle manufacturer combined. Like who could have seen that happen?
You can't.
Right? Look, I my belief was back then that like we have the opportunity to become like the EV BMW, like the EV Porsche, right? And like that was a big enough vision and belief in and of itself, right? And so then when it's become this greater thing, you're like, wow. But I think it goes to show you, I think just in general that, and I think we've seen this a lot, especially with enterprise software companies in the last 10 years, the opportunity is always much bigger than you think, right? It's like so easy to discount like a company. Well, how big is the problem they're solving, right? Or like how big is the market? And I think we've seen time and time again that like what comes off initially as a really something small maybe or a niche market can explode really, really quickly. And it's turned a lot of conventional thinking on its head around like, well, how do you build a product? How do you take it to market? And I think we've seen a shift there a lot from this very, and this is probably going too much into early stage startup weeds, like this like lean startup methodology, MVP approach, where you like experiment all the time around like a couple of different ideas, versus I would say the latest crop of data companies and infrastructure companies where folks iterate around a specific idea or like a specific pain point. And it oftentimes takes companies like a long time to get their solution there. But then once it lands, things go crazy. And I mean, we saw a perfect example of that is a completely different space than the data and analytics space, but it's a company that I try to draw analogies to what we're building is Figma, which I mean, people would have looked at Figma 10 years ago and it was a design tool and Adobe just acquired it for $20 billion, right? And it's a tool that was used by designers to design product, right? And so there's many, many examples of this, you know, Datadog being a perfect example of that within like the data space. I can now remember how I got on this topic, but
no, that's good. I mean, like one reason I go back to the experience is I like to build a case that of where you were and how you got here. I mean, in Tesla, by example, you were in finance. Are you, you're not a finance major, are you?
No, I was a history and literature major in undergrad.
Well, how do you end up in finance? Well, so anyway, you can answer that as we go here, but Better Cloud, was that before Tesla or afterwards?
No, that was afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought. So then you go to Better Cloud and you go into operations and SaaS, which is interesting. I mean, you're very versatile, which is great. And then somewhere in there, and this is where I'm trying to build the case for, you get into data analytics.
Yeah. Well, I mean, don't forget that, you know, if you rewind all the way back to the Tesla like experience, we didn't have like a data team. Right. And so I worked on the finance team, but like if there was a single function that was working on any type of analytical support, financial analytics, data analytics, like that was our team. And I'm not claiming that our team was super advanced data engineers, right? Like we were dangerous, but that was the role that we played. And so I saw a lot of kind of those interpersonal dynamics between like data analytics finance functions, and then like the operators that they supported. And then at Better Cloud, my role was like this generalist operator role. And that was like, hey, go build out our sales team or go fix these customer experience functions, right? And to do any of that well, I mean, you got to be data driven. That's easy to say, much harder to do. And so one of the investments the company made like halfway through my journey or maybe like 30% through my journey is we started to invest in building out our own data and analytics function. And so I worked really closely with that team throughout most of my tenure at Better Cloud. So I started to see a lot of themes I had experienced around the workflow between me and that team. And I was starting to see those like friction points or pain points, but just like from the other side of the coin, right? That in many ways is like my exposure to data and analytics. And what's interesting, if you're thinking about me as like a founder more broadly in the space, is I'm dangerous, right? Me and my company and our product, we're in many ways attacking the pain points around data and analytics workflows, but largely from like the business perspective as well. So a lot of the service area we think about is that collaborative environment between like analytics and then the business and the operators that kind of leverage the data in their day-to-day.
So, all right, so I got it. So then Tesla, Better Cloud brings you to Workstream, and obviously that's what we're here to talk about data analytics. At one point do you wake up and you say, hey, time to start another data company? It's, you know, Workstream is it. How do you make that leap? I mean, there are a lot of data solutions out there. Yeah, I'm an IBM, and you know, we have data solutions. There's a lot of independent data providers, Microsoft, there's Oracle. You know, what makes you say, hey, today's the day I'm going to create this company based on data analytics? workflow, as you mentioned, and then we'll get into differentiators, et cetera. But what makes you say, hey, there is a space here that's not bridged. I'm creating a company.
Yeah, of course. So, and we can talk more about this later. When I look at what we're building, it's workflow and it's collaboration. Like, for the job to be done, that is analytics. We're not building a new analytics solution. So that's an important, and we can talk about how I think about that and differentiators later. But there's a very clear project that happened in my fifth year at Better Cloud. And I was working really closely with our data team, and we were looking at our customers. And without going too much into the Better Cloud journey, we had this like original product that we'd built. And then, you know, 4 years later, we had launched this new flagship platform that was like driving all of the company's growth. And we were kind of looking about opportunities to migrate customers from one feature to another, or upsell them, et cetera, et cetera. And so it was a very iterative, data-driven project. And there was just tons of back and forth. And a lot of that back and forth was like, hey, Nick, like, check out this like data dump in a spreadsheet that would get like dropped to me via email. Or I would have, I'd want to see some new view of the data, and they would like build out a report in Tableau, which was our, you know, reporting analytics, like dashboarding solution, right? And they pull that together and like grab a screenshot of the thing and send it to me in Slack. And I was like, huh, this is super interesting. There's been all of this incredible innovation in like the actual like data stack and the analytics tools themselves, but no one has really reimagined this workflow. And ultimately, like, the workflow is happening in these kind of repurposed tools, everything from like a service desk for like managing requests to like your intranet for like building out knowledge and getting kind of operators up to speed on like your data, or like Slack for like question and answer. And these things are all disparate and they're not living together. By happenstance, I had I'd gotten introduced to a bunch of founders who had built really successful businesses that were effectively workflow businesses that were focused on a specific job to be done or a specific persona. And I was like, hey, this is really interesting. Like, there's this acute pain point that I feel. And I see examples of these like multi-billion-dollar businesses that have been built around like analogous jobs to be done. And isn't the job to be done the workflow of how data informs the business and operations like one of the most critical things in an organization? I'm like, yes, this is like a real pain point that I've personally experienced. I think there's an interesting way to solve the problem, and so. And it's a great opportunity. And so that was what convinced me to do the crazy thing of quit my job when I was living in New York with a two-year-old with another baby on the way. And this was 6 months before the pandemic. So you can imagine what happened next. But yeah, that was the gem that started the proverbial avalanche.
Makes sense. So 6 months prior to the pandemic, you mentioned?
Yeah, so I quit my old job summer of 19, and then I was like, I've been working for a while. Let me take, you know, 3-4 months off and just rest up. So I did a bunch of that, and then I kind of got the company off the ground at the very end of 19, beginning of 2020. And me and my co-founder had just started scoping the product and laying down the first code the first week of March of 2020.
Was it nerve-wracking? When you go into, you know, making this big change, a life event, so to speak, and then you are essentially shut down due to COVID? Or did it give you more time to focus?
I mean, you know, from a personal perspective, I knew we were getting the company off the ground and we were going to have a baby within like the same first 3 months. So like my second son, Liam, was born in New York City in March of 2020 when we were starting to get the company off the ground.
Congrats.
So, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So I kind of knew that there was like these two crazy events happening, and then like we had a 100-year pandemic hit us. You know, because from the business's perspective, right? Like, we were just starting building, so it didn't impact us that much. And because we're a software company, we were able to pivot pretty quickly to just like being fully remote. And now we're just like a fully remote organization. We have employees spread out everywhere. And so from that perspective, I think, the pandemic has been good for us. You know, in the first, I would say, 9 months, you know, we didn't have like a fully baked solution. So we weren't like Zoom, as an example, which is like perfectly positioned to take advantage of like that, like, you know, macroeconomic moment. So there was like, we struggled maybe more than I think we would have in that first year, just trying to get the attention of people because everyone had a lot going on. I mean, no matter who you were, you were going through a pretty exceptional time. And we were asking for you to like be a beta partner at that point and help us like design our solution. But I think longer term, the overall shift to fully remote or hybrid work, it like increases the stakes for kind of facilitating analytics workflows, right? And if you believe that every company needs to be data-driven to succeed in the modern marketplace, well, like, how do you operationalize your data insights? Like, that's really, I mean, as important as ever. And we do a good job of helping not co-located teams do that.
Were you self-funded to begin with or venture funded right out of the gate?
Yeah, so it was self-funded, and then we kind of rolled into a large, like, kind of super angel round through folks that I knew that would write checks into, like, companies like ours. And then we more recently raised a large seed round by Lair Hippau, who's a premier VC here in New York. And so that ended up happening kind of 9 months ago. But we... Nice. We kind of limped, in the first couple of years, just like kind of stringing together checks from folks who invested in early stage companies and were passionate about our mission.
2 minute workstream pitch. I'm a customer now. What is the pitch?
Yeah, so the pitch is we're Dropbox for your critical data assets. So we're a single place where you can consolidate all your data and analytics assets, from spreadsheets to dashboards to reports, wherever they live, regardless of their system, into a single collaborative environment. And so you can use our tool to consolidate access to those assets, as well as facilitate kind of all of your critical workflows around your data. So those workflows could be getting new employees up to speed, such as salespeople or customer success managers on the analytics and reporting assets that they need to do their job. The workflow could be iteratively building new assets alongside kind of operators, such as new dashboards or reports. Or it could be kind of facilitating ongoing kind of reporting that fits into your like daily operational cadence. And so what's cool about our product is that it's a workflow tool, and we're agnostic to what your data and analytics stack currently looks like. And so all of what I'm describing is directly integrated with your data stack. And so you can continue to use all of the tools that you already use, and you can just plug our solution right into it. And so we'll integrate directly with your BI solution. We support like dozens of integrations with any tool imaginable to analyze data, from spreadsheets to maybe reports in Salesforce. And then we even plug into communication and workflow tools like your Agile project management solution or a communication tool like Slack. So we're really trying to help you consolidate all of the different assets that your business uses to make decisions and all of the workflows around them.
So is it like a single lens or a single pane of glass across these different products, software products? Is that essentially the way to look at it?
Yes, think of it as a single pane of glass for anything you use for data and reporting. So that could be Tableau, that could be Looker, that could be Power BI, that could be the one-off spreadsheet with a data dump from 3 months ago, right? That could be dashboards that live within Salesforce that are telling you about sales achievement, right? And it's a single lens, a single repository for all of those assets. And you can do all the things you would expect in a repository, like organize them into collections. And so that's really how it starts, this single place for access. But then we also offer all of this kind of collaboration and workflow on top of it. And so you don't need to go off to some generic intranet, some other destination to get access to like documentation or workflow. It all lives there in that single place.
Is it hybrid cloud though? I mean, is it across any form factor, or is it all SaaS?
So right now our product is all SaaS. I mean, we mostly support other SaaS products that are out there. I mean, there are hybrid like scenarios, like we support some instances of people's like BI servers as for example. But yeah, our product, it's a SaaS product. Anyone can go to our website, workstream.io, and can quickly sign up. And it's delivered over the internet. And when you set up an account, you go in and you connect us to all these other systems.
Which would be SaaS in nature. It'd be on
generally SaaS in nature. Yeah. It's really cloud forward.
So just to drive the point home, and maybe it's a reverse engineer of what you just described, can you outline a use case of here's a customer that is doing X, Y, and Z. They need Workstream to be able to do A, B, and C.
Yeah, of course. So one of the use cases I love to talk about is like displacement of the data team service desk. And so if you've worked at a data team, you probably have some version of a quote unquote service desk that you use to like collect the requests of other folks throughout the organization. And that could be like just an email handle that people send a request to, or they've like implemented an actual tool, like Jira service desk, that's like a portal where someone can go in and open a ticket. What's really problematic about those workflows today is kind of the request and all that collaboration is going to live in a completely different place. So instead of doing that, you go into, if you were a customer of ours, you open up Workstream, you could start a conversation with somebody else on your team. And as that asset to deliver that conversation is built and delivered, call it a Power BI report, that asset can be viewed and iterated upon directly in line with the conversation. And so what you've got in this case is the single pane of glass of the history of the collaboration, as well as the actual asset, right? It prevents lots of context switching across various systems, and it speeds up not only development cycles, but decision-making cycles for teams. So that's an example of like a relatively rudimentary use case of our mm-hmm. product. Another, which is more like, think of it as being in the development phase of like building something new. Another big use case for us is like an enablement use case. So you have all of these assets that already exist within your environment, and they've been built for these very specific users who've like requested them over time, like I was just talking about. So let's say it's sales managers within your sales organization, and maybe you've got 15 dashboards that live within your BI solution, and then there's 30 reports, or if we'll call it 5 reports, that live within Salesforce. And so what you can do is you can create a collection within our system, give all of the sales managers access to that collection of those reports, and build out documentation and training videos for those folks. And so ultimately, again, it's a single pane of glass to get at all of their reporting. And it obviates the need for one-off training sessions, which is just, quite frankly, a terrible use of everyone's time. And when you've got a team that's growing quite a bit, it definitely consumes a lot of cycles for teams.
Does it serve as a CI/CD workflow or pipeline, like to automate procedures and tools and?
The less that, although we do some work to like plug in to like the modern CI/CD workflows that are starting to come to market for data teams. So the one that is really exploding, obviously, right now is the DBT open source product, or like do the DBT proprietary product. So that's like an example of a solution set that we integrate with. We kind of plug into workflows like that, but there's nothing inherently like CI/CD about our solution specifically. Think of it more as a workflow tool between the data team and then the other folks in the business that they collaborate with.
I see. Who's your biggest competitor then, and how are you differentiated?
Yeah, so competition is really interesting for us. What I would generally say is like, this is a new category, and part of my sickness as like a founder and as a person is I always want to go and do the thing that's never been done before, which is a great opportunity. But then you got to go through all the pain of trying to create a new category. You know, there's some adjacent categories that people always try to bucket us in with. The biggest, the most well-known one is like the data catalog category. And there's lots of solutions, either new solutions or ones that have been around for a long period of time, like Alation. And fundamentally, those are tools that are solving for different use cases and for different users, even if maybe there are some like analogies to what we're doing. So people bring that up, but we're definitely not a data catalog. I personally believe that we're competing more with the kind of tape and baling wire solutions that teams have already come up with. That's a challenge in and of itself, right? Because you're kind of pulling people out of existing behaviors. So that's like pulling them out of like a messaging solution and their intranet, trying to kill like their service desk and kind of bring it all together into something that is more valuable than the constituents, you know, of its parts, and is purpose built for kind of that workflow. And then we kind of think of like, or at least the way I really think about it is, you know, you have a data function, and there's lots of debate within like the data community today of like, well, how should you run like a data team? And like, there's a lot of debates about like, should it be like a product driven organization or like a service driven organization, right? And my perspective on it is like, there's elements of like being a data team that's like, it's a very much of a product workflow. Like, you need to understand your users and build data products that like meet their needs. But then there's like service-driven workflows of like, hey, the CEO of the company needs this data and you got to provide the CEO of the company this data. Like, that's never going to go away. And then there's like also an engineering part of the workflow, right? Of like the CI/CD workflow that we've been talking about, where you're like building data pipelines and transforming data within your data warehouse. What's challenging for data teams is like, it's one team that's doing all of that, which I just described, and like building a more traditional product, you'd have like distinct functions handling each one of those things that are specialized in each one of those things. And so we think a lot about, you've got these product driven quote unquote workflows and these service driven quote unquote workflows. And how can we become that facilitator of them?
Let me ask you in a different way. Maybe this will explain it further. When you're working with clients, what's their biggest hesitation or reason for not taking on Workstream? In other words, hey, Nick, thank you for bringing in your solution, but we've already got X, Y, and Z. Does it go back to the baling wire that you mentioned and duct tape or what?
Yeah. I mean, generally it does, right? And what I didn't call out is I'm not the first person who's thought about some of these problems, right? Like the analytics tools themselves have thought about like these problems. And so to an extent, you're also competing with some of like the native solutions that like something, some of the native solutions that might be available like within your BI tool, just as like one specific example. And so our competition is we have to be like 10 times better than kind of stitching together all that stuff from the tools that you already use, right? So like, how is Workstream make your life 10 times better in like facilitating like conversations about your data and requests for new types of like analytical assets or for training your organization on your analytics, right? Or understanding which analytical assets are the most valuable to your organization and should be invested in more, right? And there are ways that teams can do that through some of what we spoke about, but we can help you do it much more efficiently, much more cost effectively, and in a way that lets your organization make much better decisions off of their data. And that's exciting to go out and evangelize the market. But the challenge or the objections that we have to overcome are, hey, I've already kind of figured out a way to do this somehow, some way within my environment, either something that I built myself or just stitching together solutions from the tools that we already use. And so in some ways that's harder than, hey, I used an earlier version of this type of product, but it's like on my on-premise server, but now we want something that's like a SaaS product, right? And so it's a very, very different paradigm for, or just rather dynamic of how you build a business and how do you get the problem you're solving and the solution you're offering to click for a customer.
If you don't mind speaking to it, what's your monetization strategy? Is it all subscription?
Yeah, it's subscription. So we have a free version of the product. And again, shameless plug, go ahead and check out the free version of our product at any point on our website. You can get started. You can get a lot of value out of it. And kind of where people kick into our like subscription tiers is when you get like a critical mass of users in your workspace or like assets that you're collaborating on or building around. It moves to like a yearly subscription model. There's a bunch of method around it. We work pretty closely with customers, just come up with what that looks like. So there's a lot of, close conversations right now with customers on like what the exact numbers look like. And that's just largely driven by how big your kind of deployment ends up being.
And where did you say the listeners can go to check it out?
Just workstream.io. It's our website. You can create a free account there at any point in time.
Any client references that you can talk to today, or is it still early?
Definitely client references. A couple of names that I'll mention. Gusto, payroll company, one of our large like early adopters. We've been pretty successful, I would say, in general with e-commerce companies. So Dr. Squatch, which is a direct-to-consumer business based out of LA. If you're into men's grooming products, I highly recommend you go check out their soap. So they've been awesome early design partners and evangelists of our solution. Russell Digital Group, a media company based here in New York as well. So we've done really well, I would characterize mid-market technology, direct-to-consumer media businesses that have invested a lot in their data and analytics capabilities.
Look, you mentioned the seed investment that you have. If I was one of those investors here, what is their definition of success for the company?
Look, I think when you take outside investment, they always, at the highest level, they just want you to make make them a bunch of money.
Of course. But I mean, how do you plan on doing that? Is it just by scaling the company, growing the company? Is it like,
go ahead. Yeah, look, I think there's like two like potential outcomes, like successful outcomes here, right? So the first is somewhat dependent upon a large macro trend that is unfolding right now, which I truly believe in, which is that every company is going to become heterogeneous in their data and analytics stack, meaning that more and more analytics solutions are going to come to market that are going to address specific jobs to be done, right? Self-service analytics, as an example, right? But I think there are going to be solutions that are going to continue to come to market. They're going to do a really good job there. And there'll be really good solutions for dashboarding. And there might be solutions for, and you see this today, like getting data into operational systems, et cetera, et cetera. And I can continue to go on and on. So if you believe that in that heterogeneous environment, we can become an enduring company as that single pane of glass and that aggregator, that single place that people go. And that's what the investors are looking for is like a multi-billion dollar company that we raise a lot of money for and we invest tons in growing, right? And then a medium outcome, which is still very successful for any like reasonable observer, is we raise like a lot less money and you go and you get acquired by a large technology company that has a lot of data products and is looking for like a workflow solution to stitch everything together, right? And that's more like getting really closely with, and as an example, like a Google Cloud that has like five products that we already integrate with today. Right. And they're looking to us as an extension of kind of their analytics suite and more moderate investment there. And the strategy is slightly different. And it's more about just winning a lot of customers within that like specific niche. We're still early. I mean, we're a seed stage company, so we'll know a lot more in 3 years of exactly what trajectory we're on.
Is there a milestone coming up that's got you excited? Any events, any releases?
Yeah, I mean, the big one that happened 3 months ago is we launched out of our private beta, which we had been in for a while, and we opened up our product as we were talking about and started signing up, customers for like formal paid relationships. So that was huge. When you look forward for us, I would just say in general where we are, we're just investing a lot in kind of getting to that early stage of like early scale product market fit where we've got, hundreds and hundreds of customers that have like formal relationships with us. And that's like the part of the journey that we're on. I would say from a product perspective, one of the things that our customers are really excited about is our upcoming capabilities around data asset like usage tracking and metrics. And the high level pitch here is you build lots of data products, there are lots of users internally that leverage them, but you have very little insight into exactly what features they use and who's using them. So think of it as like a product analytics tool, but for your internal data analytics that helps you triangulate kind of all the qualitative insights you get from users with like click data and heat maps of like exactly who's interacting with that dashboard and when and why.
It's like the analytics for the analytics.
Yeah, it gets like incredibly, incredibly meta. It's like you want analytics for how your own internal analytics are being used, and then your head starts to explode. But it's one of those really cool features that we've been working on for quite a bit of time, and folks are excited for it.
Well, I love your mission statement. We believe data teams are a compass. And I think you explained that in the use cases with WorkStream. You do have a free ebook out there called Kill Your Service Desk, which is pretty provocative. Anything you want to say on that? Why kill your service desk? What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's, of course, intentionally provocative, right? And if you're interested, I'm a geek for, like, management, as you probably figured out from listening to me, like, I'm a total geek for, like, management philosophies and, like, the way to get teams to, like, work the best together. And, like, my whole belief is, like, the way we are thinking about the productivity of, like, a data team is completely wrong. And like, how do you manage a data team? And one way of thinking about that is like, hey, a data team should be run like an engineering / product team. And that means we should be using like agile project management methodology, like Scrum. And then the other is, hey, like we need to service the business and, we're going to implement a transactional service desk. Anyways, they're like two polar opposites. And I think they're both completely wrong. My touchy-feely solution is data teams should be measured upon their ability to create shared consciousness of their data for the organization. And to measure that is impossible by traditional management science. And so we need new barometers for that. And of course, I think there are ways that our product can help there. But that's really what that ebook is about. And if you're interested in learning more about how you can build shared consciousness of your data for your organization, go ahead and check out the ebook.
Can you give us the 30-second view? I mean, that's pretty deep, shared consciousness of the data. I mean,
the 30-second view is we are in a world, and data teams like epitomize this world, and where there are so many changes happening simultaneously, and there are so many different vectors by which like they receive inputs, that it's impossible to effectively build what you would see as a like assembly line to effectively manage their workflow, right? So, and now this is not like a 30-second thing, but we'll roll with it, right? So like, if you think about a traditional management science of like the assembly line, this goes back 100 years, each step in an assembly line, effectively is completely is independent of the other, meaning that like the guy turning the rivet on like the Ford car doesn't really need to know what's happening in the step before or the step after. So they can kind of just like churn out you have these independent actors that churn out a car without any knowledge of what other people are doing effectively. But when you think of data, you don't have a rivet coming from the left and then like an output going out to the right. You actually have information flowing from like all the different directions of the organization. And you can't effectively deliver a data insight if you don't have an appreciation and understanding of the other person's perspective. If you believe all of that, it means that our traditional frameworks for building teams are wrong. And we need to invest in new frameworks for teams. And I leverage the work of General Stanley McChrystal quite a bit in the ebook, who talks about in the battlefield about how you create shared consciousness. And his example was the fight against Al-Qaeda in Iraq and how he created shared consciousness of the battlefield for a distributed team of many, many kind of sub-organizations from like the special forces to intelligence, and how they were able to navigate this modern world in which everything is interdependent. It's not independent. And there's too much information coming for a assembly line approach to allow you to get to a good result. And so I kind of apply his thinking there around developing shared consciousness and building teams to the purview of data teams, so to speak.
I like it. I like it. Hey, I've got an extension off that question as we're kind of wrapping up here, and that is culture. Look, you've been a part of Tesla. You've been a part of other organizations, Better Cloud, et cetera. Now you run your own company. What kind of culture? You say you like to get into management philosophy. Tell me about the culture you're trying to drive or embody.
Yeah, look, I think, and this is like we could spend another hour talking about culture, right? And I've seen like lots of different cultures. So like Tesla, it's like best overall athlete, like take out the knives and like attack each other culture like every day. Like I used to like describe it to my colleagues that like, if you work at Tesla, if you're not willing to be proverbially punched in the face every day, like you're never going to survive here, because it's like incredibly, incredibly smart people who like go at it. And that's how they create like amazing things. Right. There's nothing, I mean, you can argue with that. That is to an extent the cult of Elon. Right. But that's the culture of that organization. We're building like a workflow and collaboration solution. And so from our perspective, it's very different from that. A couple of things I'll mention about our culture. We want everyone at our company to bring their full selves and their real selves to work. And that means something completely different for everyone. So like it hasn't happened here, but like my young child might run in to this room at any point in time and interrupt us and become like a guest participant in this podcast. But like, yeah.
Is it he or she? Hilarious.
I have two boys and actually I have a 3-week-old daughter. That was just born. So she will not be running on the podcast. Yeah, thank you. But it's bring your full self to work. We're collaboration forward. So like I tell my team this over and over again, like never feel the need to bring me like a finished product. I'd rather you bring me something that's 10% done. And then I'll tell you if you're headed in the right direction or not. Right. So it's a collaborate quickly, collaborate first and get lots of iterative cycles in. And I would say, lastly, it's one in which we respect everyone's opinion, and we want everyone to question everything as long as it's done respectfully. No, there are no sacred cows. There's nothing that any new person shouldn't look at with a critical lens. That hopefully facilitates a very data-driven culture in which anyone can come in and make immediate impact.
Sign me up. Hey, is there any literature or books that you read on a regular basis that our listeners be interested in?
Yeah. So I read a lot. I'm honestly on a really crazy like sci-fi kick right now. So I'm not sure how much your listeners are going to be into that. I'm reading all of the Dune prequels right now. and there's like 20 of them. I would generally say like where I get a lot of my learnings is in reading histories. And yeah, I was a history major in undergrad. And so I read a lot of not like business self-help books, but lots of like stories of businessmen. So or just like historical stories that can teach you things. And so I generally say, like, learn from everything you do and everything you read, even if it's not directly applicable. So an amazing business history book, if you're so inclined, is go read Titan, the biography of John Rockefeller. And it is not only incredibly well written, like the type of book where I'm like pulling out a dictionary every other page to like figure out like, you know, what some word I've never heard of means, but it's just a pretty incredible story of how like the Gilded Age robber barons like built these massive fortunes and empires in a way that we haven't really seen until obviously some of the kind of tech billionaires more recently have become controversial. But there's some really interesting analogies between that time and some of the kind of crazy wealth creation that's happened in the last two decades here in America.
What historical context has taught you the most? In other words, are you like a Marcus Aurelius? Hey, you got to study this guy in ancient Rome. Or what other areas of historical relevance do you say, hey, this is amazing to me. It also has taught me a lot.
Yeah, so I'm kind of on like the polar opposites in some ways of history. So I'm actually very into like the last two decades of American history. So like my college thesis was about like the Vietnam War as an example, and this was in the aftermath of like the U.S. invasion of Iraq, post 9/11. And so you could see like why as a 20-something-year-old, or I guess I wasn't 20-something, as like a late college undergrad, I was like interested in that as a topic. So I'm really interested in late like American history. And then I'm also really interested in prehistory and the stories of peoples and cultures that like you kind of have to recreate. And it's not even like necessarily written down. It was all passed down through oral tradition. And so that could be prehistory of any continent. But I've done a lot of kind of like Native American prehistory as well.
Awesome. I love history. Sometimes I wish I graduated electrical engineering. Boring. I should have done history. Where can folks reach you if they want to contact you directly? People listening.
Yeah. So if you want to contact me, email me anytime. I'm just nick@workstream.io. Love to hear from anyone who's interested in what we're doing. Feel free to also find me on LinkedIn. I believe my handle is literally just Nick-from-workstream. If you want to connect with me there or follow some of my hot takes around collaborating on your data, feel free to connect or follow me.
Do you have a newsletter, blog, or anything else like that from the website, Workstream?
Yeah, we do. There is also a blog on our website as well. We're starting to do some thought leadership, so you can just go to workstream.io and find our blog and subscribe.
Fantastic. Nick, thank you for being here. It's been a pleasure. Is there anything I didn't ask you or something that you wanted to convey that I didn't properly get out?
No, I don't think so. I think this has been pretty comprehensive. Just thanks so much for having me on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. I always like talking about data, workflow, analytics, right up my alley, man. That's why Making Data Simple. That's what you're doing. I like it. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
You as well. Good luck with everything and happy that that your COVID test was negative.
And thank you for all you listeners out there. As always, rate us on any flavor of the podcast you're listening to. Meanwhile, hit us on almartintalksdata@gmail.com. If you have any insight, if you want to be on the podcast and or you'd like to hear of a topic, we'd love to hear from you. Thank you. And until next time, we'll see you on the podcast.